I'm here with Alexander McCurse, editor-in-chief of The Duran. Alexander, I've got a Caitlin Johnstone article pulled up, and the title reads, "The hugely important OPCW scandal keeps unfolding. Here's why no one's talking about it." This is a huge story. Alexander, get into it.
Yeah, it is an absolutely huge story. Now, this is all about the OPCW is the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. It's the organization that was set up when the Convention for Prohibiting Chemical Weapons was agreed and signed in order to police and administer that convention. And what has happened, as we all know, is that there have been a number of alleged chemical weapons attacks in Syria over the course of the Syrian war. The United States and Britain and France have consistently accused the Assad government, the Syrian government, of having perpetrated those attacks, and it has steadily sought to draw the OPCW, this supposedly impartial international organization set up by international treaty, into investigating these chemical weapons incidents. And it's tried to get the OPCW, it's used the OPCW to say essentially that it's the Syrian government that carried out these attacks. Now, all this relates to an incident that took place in December, about a year ago, in a town called Douma, which is near Damascus. Now, Douma was for a time controlled by a violent anti-Assad Islamist group. This group was besieged in that town by the Syrian army. It then negotiated a deal to evacuate itself from that town, Douma, with the Syrian army. Shortly after that negotiation took place, there were allegations that appeared across the media that there'd been a chemical attack on that town by the Syrian army, and the United States, Britain, and France responded by launching cruise missile attacks upon Syria. So there was an alleged chemical attack, and that was succeeded by an American, British, French missile attack. It led to furious arguments in the UN Security Council, over the course of which the Russians said that the Syrian army had actually managed to gain control of this town, because directly after those attacks took place, this violent jihadi group that had been in control was removed from the town. The Russians said, let's call in the OPCW inspectors to find out what happened. The OPCW inspectors, after a certain delay of a couple of days, did eventually go there, but after about a year, they started to produce a series of reports, the first of which said that there'd been traces of chlorine found in the town. And then we had another report earlier this year, which alleged that this chlorine originated from two canisters which had been found in the town, and that those two canisters had been dropped by an aircraft. The point being that the Syrian government is the only party in the battle that had aircraft. So the implication was that those canisters had been dropped by a Syrian government aircraft, which meant that there was a link behind this chemical attack to the Syrian government. Well, what has since happened, as Caitlin Johnson says, is that the whole thing has been investigated. Various whistleblowers from within the OPCW have come forward. The first one, it turns out, is a man called Ian Henderson, who was one of the original inspectors. He actually went physically on the ground looked at what he saw there and reported back that those two canisters, which were treated as the smoking gun, if you like, they'd not been dropped by an airplane at all. They'd actually been manually placed there, which indicated that this was probably, almost certainly, a fabricated setup. Because, you know, if the canisters were placed there, they could only have been placed there by people connected to this violent jihadist group who were in the town. And now we've had yet another OPCW investigator, somebody who was physically present, who has provided further information that suggests that there was deep corruption about the way in which the investigation was conducted. He said that the evidence was that there was insufficient chlorine detected to point to a chemical attack. Chlorine is used for many purposes, including as normal civilian purposes. It's not necessarily, the fact that traces of chlorine are found is not necessarily proof of an actual chemical attack, and that the traces that were found were more consistent with normal civilian use, but that the entire report was manipulated to make it appear that there was a chemical attack and to conceal the fact that the quantities of chlorine found were not such as to point to a chemical attack. Now, I'm going to finish this rather complicated and intricate explanation by saying that we at the Durand were always skeptical, very skeptical, about the fact that there'd been any kind of chemical attack there at all. We said it made no sense. Why would the Syrian army carry out an illegal chemical weapons attack on the town it was about to take over, and where it had already negotiated the withdrawal of the opposing forces, the Islamist group that was in control of it previously? Why would it invite an attack by the Americans and the British and the French upon itself by carrying out such an attack? It made no sense. And we had actually been extremely skeptical, not just about this attack, but about all the other attacks, the other chemical weapon attacks that have supposedly happened in Syria and which have been attributed to the Syrian government. Well, now I think we can say with confidence that our intense skepticism has been vindicated. We now have two whistleblowers from within the OPCW. They have shown that this particular attack on Douma, the evidence they provided shows that almost certainly there was no chemical attack there. That points strongly, in my opinion, to the fact that the other chemical weapons attacks, which allegedly happened in Han Sheikhoun a year before, in an area of Syria called East Ghouta back in 2013, they were probably manipulated to the same degree. This is my view. So this is a bit, as Caitlin Johnson rightly says, this is big news.
All right, Alexander, let me read you some parts from Caitlin Johnson's article. And actually, this was first published on Counterpunch, and it was published by journalist Jonathan Steele.
Yeah.
And Caitlin Johnson says Steele is an award-winning reporter who worked as a senior foreign correspondent for The Guardian back before the outlet was purged of all critical thinkers on Western imperialism. Mm. And he first waded into the OPCW controversy last month with a statement made on BBC revealing the existence of a second whistleblower on the organization's investigation into an alleged chemical weapons attack in Douma, Syria. So the second whistleblower goes by the pseudonym Alex. Mm. This is a real whistleblower, by the way, folks, a real whistleblower. Yeah. Goes by the name Alex out of fear for his safety. The information provided by Alex has turned out to be far more incendiary even than the leaked engineering assessment.
Yes.
Here right. are seven major highlights. You want yeah. me to read you those seven major highlights? Or you want to comment before I read
that,
you?
No, I just wanted to say one thing, which is that Jonathan Steele, who is the journalist involved in this, is a legendary figure in British journalism. He was one of the great foreign correspondents that we used to have, and he used to work for The Guardian. He was The Guardian's man in Moscow when the Soviet Union fell, for example. I mean, his coverage was superb. We are talking about an extremely, extremely serious man. And of course, the fact that his story was published in Counterpunch, which is an alternative news magazine, highlights the fact that people of this caliber, like Jonathan Steele, no longer have access to mainstream media in the way that they did. We've heard that there was a reference to the story on the BBC, but if you go to the Times, the Guardian, the Daily Telegraph, the big newspapers here in Britain, none of them are covering this story.
Exactly. So let me read you those 7 points, Alexander. You can comment on them so we can close it out. And I think what this really shows is also that the OPCW is corrupt. It's been infiltrated by deep state warmongers. And, they're fabricating evidence in order to push the U.S. into conflict with Syria. So let me read you those 7 points, Alexander. Point number one, U.S. government officials attempted to pressure OPCW investigators into believing that the Assad government was responsible for the Douma incident. And I'm only going to read you the first parts of these points, Alexander, so as to not make it too long. Point number two, Alex reports that internal dissent on the OPCW's official publications on the Douma incident was far more ubiquitous than previously known, saying most of the Douma team felt the two reports on the incident, the interim report and the final report, were scientifically impoverished, procedurally irregular, and possibly fraudulent. Point number three, all but one member of the team agreed with the engineering assessment that it was far more likely that the chlorine cylinders were manually placed on the scene by people on the ground. Point number four, Ian Henderson, the South African ballistics expert, whose name was signed on the leaked engineering assessment, seems to have been responsible for leaking it. Point number five, investigators experienced pressures against saying anything about their mounting findings that no chemical attack occurred, with Alex calling it, quote, the elephant in the room, which no one dared mention explicitly. Point number six, the OPCW's final report on the Douma incident explicitly claimed the investigation found reasonable grounds that the use of a toxic chemical as a weapon took place. The toxic chemical contained reactive chlorine. The toxic chemical was likely molecular chlorine. Yet, according to Alex, the levels of chlorinated organic chemicals found on the scene were no higher than you would expect in any household environment, and were in fact much lower than what would be expected in environmental samples. And point number seven, Alexander Steele mentioned last month that he unsuccessfully reached out to the OPCW for comment on the second OPCW whistler's revelations. And in his new article, he confirms that the organization is still dodging him, with both Fairweather and the OPCW's media office refusing to respond. Alexander, what do you make of these 7 points
here? Well, they're extremely disturbing, because what the tale they're telling is that the investigators, the actual inspectors who went to Douma and did the investigation, their opinions were effectively overruled by the central secretariat of the OPCW, which inserted or rather imposed a politically a report which was politically favorable to certain countries, but which contradicted the information that was coming out by its own inspectors. So we learned, for example, that 6 out of 7 of them accepted the ballistic report by Henderson, the one that said that the cylinders were manually placed, that they were not dropped for an airplane. In other words, that this whole thing was staged, because that's what telling us. But there is something actually extremely disturbing about the story, and this you really have to go deep into the Jonathan Steele account on Counterpunch to really see. What Jonathan Steele says, Alex, this is this whistleblower, and can I just also add, by the way, to what you said, this is a real whistleblower. This expression has been so abused recently, but this is a man who has come forward, putting his career in jeopardy to expose malpractice within the organization that he is working for. That is a whistleblower. Now, what this person is telling us is that the whole pattern of the investigation and the reporting of the results of the investigation was distorted and corrupted for a political purpose. This is within what is supposed to be an impartial organization set up by international treaty. He has implicated a particular diplomat, a particular official of the OPCW, who is a British diplomat called Fairweather, who is the essentially the number two in the organization. And there is a particularly sinister incident in which he describes, in which it seems that this man, Fairweather, called the inspectors in to meet with him. And in the room were three US officials from some agency of the US government that they were not informed about, but which is presumably part of the one of the sections of the intelligence community, or perhaps the State Department. And these officials, apparently, these American officials, told the inspectors that there is no question at all that there was a chemical attack on Duma, and that was really essentially what they should decide and say. And the inspectors left that meeting feeling that they were being placed under political pressure. Now, that is incredible. That is extremely disturbing. And what does the OPCW, how does it respond to these allegations? It doesn't deny them. It doesn't admit them. It simply draws the curtain of silence over them. It refuses to comment or respond. And we see that the media, the mainstream media, isn't reporting this story either. Now, this is extremely worrying and very disturbing. And can I say, what makes it particularly disturbing is not just about Duma and what happened in Syria, which is bad enough, because this idea that there were chemical weapons used in Syria has colored a lot of people's understanding of the Syrian war. If that turns out to be untrue, then I suspect a lot of people's opinions would change if they were informed about it, but they're not being informed about it. But the Western powers have also managed recently to give the OPCW the power to actually not just investigate chemical weapons incidents, but to actually say who the OPCW thinks is responsible for those incidents. And yet what we see is that the Western powers are apparently pulling the strings within the organization, are telling the inspectors what their findings should be, and are able to manipulate the processes of the OPCW and of its secretariat to produce reports that contradict the opinions and the findings of the inspectors, but which are favorable to the views of certain powerful governments in the West. Now, that is an extremely worrying thing. And frankly, what it requires is an urgent investigation, an urgent outside investigation to find out what is going on. Because frankly, if all this is true, and as I say, Jonathan Steele is an incredibly reliable journalist, I am confident of his account. If this is true, then one of the major arms control enforcement agencies has been corrupted and suborned.
Alexander, I've got one more question for you as I was listening to you speak. Trump did attack Syria after that alleged chemical weapons strike in Duma, alleged. I believe that was the one where Ivanka Trump, I may be mistaken which one was, that was where Ivanka Trump was also upset because she had pictures of kids. And
That was the one before.
That was the one before. Okay, this one, yes. Duma was where we had the video footage taken by the white helmets.
Yes.
Where they had people in the hospital. And
that's right. That's right.
They took that footage and spread it around. Okay, yes, you're right. But you had Nikki Haley running around calling for war. Now she's selling a book and she's running around.
Yes.
You know, pretending to be this measured diplomat. She was calling for war against Syria. Trump attacked Syria. Alexander, the OPCW has been corrupted. All signs point to that. Is the OPCW also, were they also running interference in the Skripal case? Question number one. The OAS, an organization which has pretty much been responsible for pushing the coup in Bolivia. That's the OAS. It seems they've been corrupted. You have organizations like the Human Rights Organization, Amnesty International, which are currently, you know, giving their feedback on what's going on in Hong Kong as well. All these international organizations seem to have been corrupted for the explicit point of creating regime changes, creating wars. What do you make of this?
Well, first of all, can I just make one point, which is that the OAS, the Organization of American States, is a slightly distinct organization from this. It's more like a kind of club of Latin American countries, which the United States has always dominated. It's dominated it for as long as I can remember. It's a distinct one. But all the others that you mentioned, the OPCW, some of the sort of human rights organizations, Amnesty International, which is not an organization, obviously, set up by international treaty, Human Rights Watch, all of these, to a very alarming extent now, I find, they have become instruments of US foreign policy, or perhaps I should say neocon foreign policy, which and pro-war foreign policy and pro-regime change foreign policy. And I find this an extraordinarily troubling thing, because if you can't rely on these organizations, and this is becoming a regular pattern, I should say the UN Secretariat has also been producing or publishing reports specifically on the Syrian conflict and on the Libyan conflict, which I thought were extremely questionable, and in relation to the Libyan conflict, have been discredited. I mean, it becomes incredibly disturbing. One of the people who's actually highlighted concerns about the state of the OPCW is its first director general, and he was sacked apparently because he didn't agree with John Bolton over the Iraq war in 2003. John Bolton at that time was one of the sort of tough, hard men pushing the Iraq war on behalf of the Bush administration. The same thing has happened with the International Atomic Energy Agency, which has also seen its leadership shifted around to conform to American policy, foreign policy dictates. I remember that some years ago, about 10 years ago, Boutros Ghali, who was the United Nations Secretary General, he apparently displeased the Americans in certain ways. The result is that he was only limited to one term, and the Americans were able to engineer that the man who replaced him was much more favorable to themselves. The problem is, if all of these agencies are suborned in that way, so that they start to reflect, they become, in effect, a chorus of support for US foreign policy objectives, as opposed to fulfilling their actual role, which is in relation to these big agencies, agencies like the OPCW, the International Atomic Energy Agency, the UN Secretariat, to act impartially, pick up by treaty. If they are, we're talking about the sort of human rights agencies that have been set up by private initiative, like Amnesty International, like Human Rights Watch, to report impartially about human rights issues. If we can't trust them, whom ultimately do we trust? And this is where you're right to bring up the Skripal affair, because, of course, the OPCW has been involved in the Skripal affair. They've confirmed in very complicated and strange ways, for example, that Novichok was used in these, what the, you know, the substance that is called Novichok was used to poison people in Salisbury during the chemical attack there. But, you know, how can we trust that if their evidence of what happened in Syria is so untrustworthy? Who do we look to? In the end, we look to no one. And that is what is so corrosive of this. During the Cold War, these agencies could be trusted. So, you know, if you had something going on between the superpowers, there was a conflict between the superpowers, and there was some kind of incident in some place, you could send inspectors from there and they would come up with a report and you could rely on it. You can't apparently do that anymore. And that is an extremely disturbing thing. It means everything is becoming politicized. Everything is becoming dangerous. We can't rely on things that happen, you know, with the Skripal affair. We can't rely on reports with NH70, where the Russians have been excluded. Who do we turn to? Who can we look to find out the truth? It's becoming very difficult. And if we can't rely on anybody to come in and hold the ring and find out the truth, then that makes the risk of conflict much greater, because it means that the United States government, or indeed any government, now becomes judge in its own cause. So as you rightly say, there was this incident in Douma. The United States carried out an attack directly after it. Nikki Haley was going around making all her various bombastic pro-war statements. And there's no one who is universally accepted any longer who can hold these people to account and who can hold them in check. It all comes down now to a question of power. And that is a very dangerous world to be in.
Yeah. Circular confirmation to go to war. Yeah. That's all it is.
Yes. Yes. Right. So I mean, it becomes a question. So power, what checked the United States in Syria was the application of Russian power. Is it all going to turn around to that now? Is it all going to be just purely a question of power politics? Well, that's a very troubling, disturbing world. But it's the one we seem to be in.
All right, Alexander McCurse, thank you very much. Guys, if you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Click on that notifications bell to make sure you get notifications when we publish a new video. Check us out on iTunes and on SoundCloud for an audio copy of this video as well. You'll find links in the description box down below. And please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, Subscribestar. Your donation helps keep this channel up and running. You'll also find links in the description box as well. And check us out on BitChute, the place for free speech when you're creating videos. And also check us out on Duran Video, our own video platform, where we post all our videos there as well. And also on Telegram, Alexander, where we have hit 100 subscribers already on Telegram, which is great.
Right.
And we also post all kinds of discounts for the shop
Yes.
as well on Telegram, as well as all our videos and everything else that's going on in the community. Alexander, Duran Shop, Telegram, Duran Video, BitChute.
All these
whatever
things.
You want to talk about.
Well, all these new platforms, as I said, we're very excited about them. We are really actually surprised and excited by how fast they're progressing and developing, and how good they're turning out to be. I mean, we are finding that, you know, they are exceeding our expectations in every way. And of course, we don't have the censorship issues that we have with more traditional legacy platforms, which have become such an obstacle to so much of our work now. So, you know, by all means, go and look there and find us there, support us there, and help us grow there, because that will really improve our service in so many ways and will make us an even better service than the one we are now. But, you know, in one respect, we are already a superb service, and that is in terms of the quality of the amazing products we sell on our shop You will find these fantastic Durand mugs, which I'm drinking a Royal Blend tea from this one, which is a marvelous British style dark Indian tea. You drink with milk. It's exactly the kind of tea you need to drink on a cold winter November day in London, such as the one we're having now. So this is a perfect mug for that. You can also drink coffee, hot coffee, as my wife does, or you can drink hot chocolate, as she also does, or you can drink beer, as I have done. And they are 15 ounces, so you can see they can hold it all, and they're beautiful porcelain bodies, so they keep it either cold in the case of beer or warm in the case of tea, whichever one you want to drink from, they're perfect for it. And they all have these marvelous emblems. This is the one of the Russian Federation. It really looks stylish and elegant. And you'll find it also, by the way, on the Kremlin's mugs and cups and saucers and plates and all those things. This is not from the Kremlin. I should quickly say this is one of our own Durand mugs. I'm sure a lot better than you'd even find there because they're so good. And you'll find not just mugs on our shop. You'll find, of course, fantastic shirts like this long sleeve shirt I'm wearing. You can see I told you that it was a cold November day where you need a long sleeve shirt on a cold November day. But you will find shirts for all weathers. You'll find long sleeve shirts like this one. You'll find short sleeve shirts. You'll find V-neck shirts. You'll find hoodies. You'll find hats. You'll find stickers, you'll find amazing things, all beautifully made. All our shirts are 100% cotton. They're perfectly stitched and beautifully put together. They look marvelous when you wear them. They feel marvelous when you wear them. So what are you waiting for? Support us, help the Durand, help yourself by owning these great and fantastic things. Go to our shop. Alex will tell you how to do it.
You'll find the link for the Durand Shop in the description box down below, thedurandshop.com. Alexander Mercurius, editor-in-chief of the Durand. Thank you very much. Till next time, everybody. Take care. Mm-hmm.